Thank you, Nick. How many people saw my presentation yesterday morning at the consultants conference? Yeah. Well, I apologize. This is going to be essentially a repeat of it. In fact, I didn't even know this paper was in the program because when I put it in, Gus Lorenz called me up and said, I'm going to put that in the consultants conference. And we've been arguing all week about why he didn't take it out of this one. But that's all right. This is going to be a shortened version of that. And I'm going to get right into it because I do have quite a bit to cover in 12 or 15 minutes. You know, the whole issue we've been getting in the several of us in the Mid-South collaboratively has been dealing with this pollinator health issue. You know, it's something 4 or 5 years ago we were avoiding it like the plague because we didn't think much good could come from us dabbling in it. We're not bee guys. We go out there and we start looking for pesticide residues. You're going to find them. I mean, there's no doubt. And then you just create more problems in it than it was worth. But we got forced because the pressure, the public pressure, the data coming out was really negative and I think agenda-driven, saying the neonicotinoids were causing a lot of colony collapse disorder. If you're not familiar with colony collapse disorder, you know, this is a malady that essentially arrived on the scene in 2006, was kind of described as just this phenomenon where beehives just suddenly collapse. And there's been a lot of things implicated in causing colony collapse disorder, and I think the primary thing you'll see in the reputable scientific literature is that varroa mites is a primary cause in the diseases that they cause. But it's not just varroa mites. It's a combination of that. It's management failures. It's a whole bunch of things. But on the social media and the public press, pesticides is getting pretty much all the credit, and in particular neonicotinoids. And, you know, 3, 4 years, 5 years ago, really what was the focus when we started doing some of our regional project was the impact of insecticide seed treatments or the neonicotinoid seed treatments. And one of the big things was planter dust. You know, this dust coming out of vacuum planters being expelled in the environment. And like I said, there's a lot of debate on this, but if you go Google colony collapse disorder, bees, 9 out of 10 articles are going to say something about neonicotinoids and how bad they are and that they're the culprit. And we're not helping ourselves. We got a lot of science out there now that it's debatable whether you actually call it science or not. Unfortunately, in our disciplines evolved that, you know, if you want to get something published, you can get it published. There's online journals out there that look to the media like they're reputable, refereed journals, and they're really not. So I don't think it really matters what the science says, unfortunately, because things are already changing. You know, this has become a public debate, and the general public is kind of on the side that, you know, pesticides are all bad. It's changing things already. We're seeing label changes, loss of products. It's taking longer to register products. And, you know, I'm sure everybody in this room, most everybody in this room is aware that the EPA has essentially initiated steps to try to eliminate insecticide seed treatments in soybean. Well, we can argue about how valuable insecticide seed treatments are in soybean. We could live without them, I'm sure of that. You know, it's not like cotton or corn. But the concern I have is we're about to set a precedent to get rid or potentially remove a technology really based on pollinator health and public pressure rather than the literature. So we've been working on this collaboratively as a group in the Mid-South. It includes University of Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi State, USDA. I'm not going to go through the list of folks here. But the real question we've been looking at in the last 4 or 5 years is just how big of a factor are neonicotinoids in contributing to CCD. And really most of our work has just been trying to figure out how much the neonicotinoids are how much is out there. And where is it? You know, is it in the pollen? Is it in the nectar? And I'm going to real quickly review what we already published in a environmental science and technology paper back last year, 2014. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because we've discussed it in the past. But we did a lot of work essentially surveying the concentrations of neonicotinoids out around grower fields. And this is just a result of that. And all we did in this this little slide is representing is went out around recently planted soybean, corn, cotton fields and sampled wildflowers around the perimeter looking to see whether this dust cloud moving across the environment was really contaminated in these wildflowers. And in fact, we did find that these neonics were on the wildflowers immediately around these fields. It wasn't all the time. Only 25% of the samples were positive, but some of the samples were quite a bit positive, you know, 50, 60, 200 parts per billion. One thing we still don't know is what this means. You know, is this really toxic to bees when you get an average of 10 parts per billion of neonicotinoids on these wildflowers. How long does this persist? This was shortly after planting. If it rains, does this problem disappear? But there was some legitimacy in saying that these neonicotinoids were getting outside the field, and primarily from planter dust. We looked at concentrations in soil prior to planting. Did I lose my time here, Nick? Prior to planting, just to see how much these neonicotinoids were carrying over. And there was some. There's some carryover. These things have, in the right in soil environment, they can persist up to a year. Not high concentrations. If you go in the middle of the season and look at concentrations in the soil, it's very variable. Again, probably dependent on the year, the soil type, and all that stuff. But at sometimes you might see several hundred parts per billion in the soil. And again, we still don't quite know what this means. You know, if you have 500 parts per billion in the soil, what's that equate to in the plant? And then again, what does that equate to in terms of affecting bee health? But one thing we do know is what you see in the soil isn't necessarily what you see in the plant. So keep in mind, I'm going to show a slide next, but we pulled these samples right at first bloom in our flower and corn. We did it in soybean. We did it in cotton. As you can see, it was variable. This is an example of cotton here. And when we went into cotton at the same time we pulled those samples, we collected nectar. We collected pollen. We didn't find any neonics in those materials. We found nothing in the nectar, extremely low concentrations in the pollen. That was the same in soybean. We didn't find anything in the blooms of soybeans, despite having relatively high concentrations in the soil. You know, we don't know if those concentrations in the soil are even available. They're probably bound, or at least a lot of it is bound to the soil itself. You know, when we extract these things in the lab, and I say we loosely, there's people doing that for us that are qualified to do it, they're using solvents that unbind things. So you definitely might detect things that aren't really biologically available. But really the long and short is we're not seeing a whole lot of evidence that there's neonicotinoids in these blooming plant parts, at least stemming from insecticide seed treatments. We also did some survey of beehives around agricultural fields. In fact, we surveyed 60 of them in three different states. We tested the bees themselves. Generally, we found very low concentrations of neonicotinoids, but there were a couple of exceptions where we found it in hives or on bees. We tested the pollen those bees were carrying. It didn't have it really at all. But I think most of the story here was kind of good news. I'm going to check my time here, if you'll excuse me.
You're about 7 minutes.
Oh, I got a lot of time then. So that's what we did, and that's kind of a really quick summary of what we did 2012. And I'm just going to kind of continue and show you what we've been doing since. And a lot of our research, some of our research anyhow, we've really kind of tried to nail down this planter dust thing. This is data from Mississippi. Angus Cashout actually has a graduate student named Adam Whalen that has done this work. But we're all kind of working and contributing data towards this effort. And this is actually looking at the percent detection of clothianidin on flower, potted flowers, essentially, that were placed downwind of a corn planter when it was planting. And lo and behold, we did see that you could find neonicotinoids, that dust coming from that planter was contaminating those flowers at least up to 100 meters away, almost certainly more. So that is a real event. We did some studies in Tennessee and soybean and cotton that essentially confirmed the same thing. This is data from Arkansas. Gus Lorenz collected where they just went around recently planted fields, but they just looked on the downwind side of those fields. And lo and behold, you see even a higher detection rate when you look at the downwind side than you saw in our previous study, which was really all directions away from that field. So that planter dust thing is an issue or a potential issue. It's a potential contamination that the bees may run into. I really think it can be fixed pretty readily. In fact, there are steps being made to fix it already. Planter companies, John Deere, Case IH, they're developing, you know, it's an engineering problem. They're going to come to a solution. I don't think it'll be long before we don't use talc and graphite when we plant in these vacuum planters. And they're putting exhaust systems and filtering systems so that we're not blowing that cloud of dust out. One of the things we did, just to get a little bit of perspective in multiple crops, and keep in mind I'm just showing you a little bit of the data that we collected, we wanted to see, well, we found 3 parts per billion in corn pollen. You know, what's that mean, 3 parts per billion? When we plant corn crop, we know we get insect control for maybe, 3-4 weeks, pretty much with all our crops on these insecticide seed treatments. You're really just getting effective insect control through the early leaf stages. When we're looking at V1 corn or V3 corn, what we see in that plant is we have hundreds or thousands of parts per billion of these neonicotinoids in the plant. And we took samples at regular intervals at all these crops up to first flower, and just to see what the profile looked like. And in corn, we saw about a 97% reduction in the concentration of neonicotinoid insecticide in the plant as it progressed and went up to first flower. In this case, that would be tasseline, of course. Of course, it was higher for Poncho 1250, but it does give you a little bit of perspective. If you're starting out with insecticidal rates at 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 parts per billion, is it really realistic to think that 3 parts per billion is very insecticidal at all? If you did the same thing in cotton, and we've got several data sets, this is one from Jeff Gore, we're talking again about hundreds, or in my data set, thousands of parts per billion at first leaf cotton, second leaf cotton, third leaf cotton. By the time you get to first flower, you're talking about 1 part per billion. You know, is that really, do we expect that to be insecticidal? I think it's pretty unlikely. This is just an example from soybean. This is data that Angus collected in Mississippi. I have some data also, but you look at cotyledon soybean, over 7,000 parts per billion. By the time you get to R1, when bees might be foraging in that crop and getting pollen or nectar, it's 1.2 parts per billion. You know, I think we're starting to figure out, and I actually think the EPA is starting to recognize that that's not an insecticidal dose. You can detect it, but that's not going to be enough that we'd expect to have lethal, sublethal effects on honeybees. We've now kind of shifted a little bit. We're trying to look at what foliar applications might play, what role foliar applications might play. We need to do some more of this work. This is showing you a neonic detection levels in pollen, cotton pollen, following a foliar application. So you're essentially looking at translocation into pollen. What I did, made full rate applications in this test of Admire Pro or Centric, and then I went and collected flowers at various intervals after that application, just to see how much was available or being found in the pollen. And it's not too surprising when you spray cotton, you come back a couple of days later, you do detect neonics in the pollen of flowers for at least several days. But I think it's a little bit encouraging that it's not hundreds or thousands of parts per billion. It's 20, 30, 40, 50 parts per billion. And then it decreases by the time you get 5-6 days after application. It looks like it decreases and pretty much is gone pretty quickly. We are starting to work a lot more with bees. I have a new postdoc working with bees because I'm getting tired of being stung. But that's the next step. We kind of know what's out there as far as the dose. Now we got to try to figure out what that means. And we're also working in the agricultural landscape with beehives because we're trying to see if, you know, you put hives in an ag area, does that really affect the health? Is it negative? And we're working with bee behavior also. So this is, again, data from Mississippi. The same graduate student, Adam Whalen, presented on this yesterday, in fact, where we surveyed, and I say we because this is his project, but several people helped contribute some data to this. He surveyed bee behavior in the various crops and found out, you know, not surprisingly, it's not all the same. You don't see many bees in corn. When you do, it's usually just during that short window when it's pollinating. They like cotton a little bit better, but really given a choice, they're really going to spend most of their time in soybean, which is good because we're not spraying soybeans like we're spraying cotton. Not surprising, the literature would have predicted this already. When are they out there? Primarily out there in midday, but the morning also. But early evening, bee foraging activity decreases pretty rapidly. So we can use this information to save ourselves some trouble and prevent accidental or unnecessary effects on honeybees. I did mention we were working more with hives and putting hives out in areas and trying to get a feel for what agriculture is doing to the health of those hives. We don't have a lot of data yet on that. It'd be very preliminary. But one of the things we just got data back on was the concentrations of pesticides we were seeing in these hives. And this is data from Arkansas showing four hives in a high ag area and four hives in a low ag area, and looking and seeing what was showing up in bees or bee pupae or pollen or the wax of those hives. And it was pretty interesting. Actually, the thing we found most often in the wax was the miticides used to control varroa mite, Coumaphos and fluvalinate, which was really interesting because we didn't use those products. They just came in on the wax, the foundation wax, which was used to establish those hives. And that wax often is recycled. We didn't really see a whole lot of neonicotinoids. In fact, in these samples, we'll see how the ones from Tennessee turn out. We didn't find any neonicotinoids in our samples. And that was pretty interesting because two of the hives at each location were being fed sugar water that was tainted with imidacloprid at low concentrations. And we didn't even detect imidacloprid in our samples. What we did detect in the pollen in the ag area was some azoxystrobin, quadris. We detected a little karate, lambda cy halothrin. So we are seeing pesticides in that pollen, including fungicides, but not super high levels. I see Nick standing up, so I probably better just go ahead and wrap this up. Apologize, it's hard to take a 20-minute talk and try to make it 15 minutes in a few hours. But again, this is really changing the way we're doing our business now, label changes and things like that. So a lot of us, and I know several people are aware of it, are developing programs, bee stewardship programs, which are collaborative product efforts to improve communication between beekeepers, growers, applicators, crop consultants, to help honestly mitigate some of the legislation that may come out affecting pesticide use. Do I need to stop, Nick?
Probably.
Okay, I'll go ahead and stop. I didn't have much more. Do we have time for a question or anything?
We can take a quick question.
All right. See, I'm bullying him now. He doesn't want me to take answer a quick.
Thank you, Scott.